Joining me on the Arts Review today is Ossian Ward, Head of Content at the Listen Gallery. Together we'll be rounding up a trio of American artists currently with shows on in London. We'll discover just how many pieces of Jeff Koons' art Damien Hirst owns at his Newport Street Gallery, which opens its second ever exhibition. With the Koons show, we'll find out the current mood of Brooklyn-based technology-obsessed artist Corey Archangel at the Listen Gallery. And over at the ICA, we'll find out about the LA artist and writer Martine Sims. All that coming up on a cram-packed Arts Review with Ossian Ward. Stay tuned. And here he comes, fresh from the Newport Street Gallery, fresh from his own gallery possibly as well. Ossian Ward, welcome to the programme.
Hiya.
Well, let's tackle the big beast in the room, Koons. At Hirst's gallery.
I know, double
whammy. This is a great feast of big works, of ego, of buying power. There's a lot of things, I presume, to talk about in the show. First of all, is it any good?
Yeah, it's interesting because I hadn't been to the space before. The first show was paintings, which I gathered showed off the space. So the space is quite something. But now you've got Koons in the space, and some people have already said, well, it was kind of made for this kind of a show. But I believe that Hirst may even have bigger Koons that he couldn't fit into this show. So there's a giant balloon monkey, I don't need to say the word phallic or whatever too often, but that's a, you know, there's lots of sex and kind of gratuitousness in the show. And the balloon monkey is particularly priapic.
Yeah.
Big blue, shiny thing. With even the kind of puckering you get on balloons, that is all, it's all a bit, ugh. But is it any good? I don't know. It's the biggest Koons show we've had in this country for a long, long time, since Saatchi was around, so collecting this kind of stuff. So, yes, it's good to see it. Is it? It's not the full retrospective. You know, maybe Damien doesn't have enough room, but he's such a fanboy. I mean, some people have called this a bromance between the two, but I think it's just idol worship to me. It feels like Hirst looking at this guy saying, I love him. You know, he's got the vitrines with the Hoovers in it. Oh, I think I'll make a vitrine myself. And he's got the basketballs half submerged in water. Oh, I could do a big tank full of formaldehyde.
Yes, so what Koons did with sort of consumer goods and sort of tech items and bits of sports equipment and the rest of it was done with nature by Hirst. Two decades later or 10 years later.
I mean, I don't know if Hirst ever got quite to the point of banality that Koons lives at and talks at and inhabits. He's just this kind of weird sort of cipher for banality, and his whole persona is like a doll, or, you know, there's something really very strange about him. And Hirst is much more upfront, much more ballsy, much more kind of, you know, Brit art in that way. But the tropes, the techniques, the ways of presenting things, they seem to really come from Koons. And I can't tell whether that makes this a kind of half of a show that you'd actually need to see Damien admitting, yes, I did take the vitrine and I did use the idea of that and, you know, and take it through to its logical conclusion. But
is that sort of implicit in the fact that Damien Hirst has such a huge collection of Jeff Koons' work and he's showing it in his very own gallery? Is he perhaps expecting people just to do the math? I mean, other than just seeing these at least very startling, amazing artefacts, these huge things, these impressive things, the high production values of Jeff Koons' work, is he maybe expecting people to kind of fill in the dots?
Well, the math is interesting because you're wondering how much all this lot cost, because, you know, these balloon dogs are famously, one went for 20-something million at auction. So some of these things are very expensive. And then you think, well, did they do what artists like to do, which is swap each other's work?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that Koons is that much of a fan of Hirst, which is interesting. So I think Koons famously collects kind of Rococo and Renaissance things and surrounds himself with these older things. So I don't even know if he's into contemporary art at all, but I don't get the feeling that it's a mutual bromance, if you want to call it that. I get the feeling that it's just Hirst in awe. I don't know. I don't think he's got the best works. He's got some iconic works. He's got the inflatable works that, you know, look like inflatables but aren't inflatables. He's got a very early work that is actually an inflatable, which is a weird, sad-looking thing from the 70s, but interesting for historical purposes.
But then it's those works that can't hark back to before Koons had this amazing, could use these amazing high-tech manufacturing techniques and processes to make this amazing sheen. Because if you look at Hirst's early work as well, of course, there's a bit of fiberboard, there's a bit of slapped on paint. Well,
he used to make it himself.
Of course, well, exactly. So there's a lack of slickness that you can see at the dawn of these men's careers, which is quite interesting considering what they later went on to do, where you almost, unless the seams are part of the work is seamless.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there's a point where you actually wonder about that, because you get to this giant installation called Play-Doh, which looks from afar much like kids have plastered a bit of coloured Play-Doh and one on top of each other, creating this big mountain. But the closer you get to it, unlike the amazing aluminium works and the shiny ones, you just think that doesn't look right. Yeah. So it's almost like there are some duds in the show, or maybe there are some duds in his collection. That's a bit disappointing, because you then think, well, maybe this isn't, you know, there's this, the room at the end with all the kind of kiddie stuff in the celebration series. There's an elephant, a blow up elephant as a blow up other thing. And these paintings, kind of horrible Duplo paintings, this kiddie room. And you, at the end, you're kind of thinking, what is this? This late period is so creepy. And, you know, there is the kind of Michael Jackson-esque.
He did Michael Jackson Bubbles, didn't he?
Yes.
And they're kind of rococo, those kind of overly decorative, almost like mantelpiece decorations. You know, you would have in a house that was full of dust and doilies, those sorts of...
There's a couple of those in there. There's the stainless steel bust that's just a version of something else. And that kind of sticks, and you're like, well, what is that?
Just finally on this show, because there's so much to talk about. Why is there so much to talk about? Because he is an artist that sort of almost defies... He's become almost not critic proof, because I think there's been some very strong words written about this show. I'm sure you'll know where they've come from.
Yeah.
But is it kind of, if not critic proof, just that one of those things you kind of almost have to go and see? There's so much to talk about without it maybe meaning anything.
There's a lot of love to hate in Koons. There's a lot of see it to believe it with Koons, because it really is that special when you're in front of it. There's a lot of why with Koons. Why did he do this stuff with the porn star and a giant bowl of eggs made out of plastic? That doesn't mean anything. So there's a real barrier to getting further. And it's the same with the man. You prod, you don't get anywhere. There's nothing. The surface is all there is. And maybe that's interesting.
Yeah, I interviewed him once and I got the full sales pitch. Yeah. And I kind of wondered what had happened really at the end of sort of half an hour in a room with him. It was, but nonetheless, strangely fascinating.
And weirdly, you know, we were talking about it earlier, that actually they're kind of a similar generation. Obviously, Koons started a bit later. He was the Wall Street salesman made good. And then Hirst caught up with him, let's say. But weirdly, Koons looks much younger and Hirst looks much older. It's a strange dynamic.
So that is Jeff Koons at the Newport Street Gallery. And that is going to be presumably a big summer show. It's on all the way until the 16th of October here in London. Next, we're going to Terra Familia for Ossian Ward, the Listen Gallery. Corey Archangel, this man is an amazing bright spark, a fantastic talker about his work. What's he doing this time?
He spent the last couple of years organising his digital life and being a kind of a digital person living his life on the internet, through the internet, making art about the internet, loving that culture, not being ironic about it. He's kept everything he's ever done, not quite every page he's ever browsed, but every little image he's downloaded, and he's created almost like a weird library of this stuff, from works that you will recognise. So he's become famous for these coloured Photoshop gradient works, which are quite beautiful, but automatic drawings made by Photoshop with some very basic instructions. And then he's also interspersed these with very pixelated images of Marilyn Manson or Posh Spice or whatever. Kind of like looking at the dregs at the same time as... So you can't work out which images he's really taken care over and which images he's just plucked from nowhere. And that's sort of the point, that he wants to level all this stuff. And actually the internet is the great leveller, because it doesn't matter how expensive or how beautiful or how valuable an image might be to someone on the internet, there's just a lot of it, and it's just kind of endless. And so this is in a way a bit of that. And you know, he says that the most lowest form of imagery that he's got are these is a short video of him taking back a car to show that he hasn't pranged it with the rental company, you know. Okay. These kind of images just scrolling past, you know, it's the most kind of
banal stuff.
lowest imagery put next to something. You know, so he's juxtaposing these things, and it's like a career survey that's kind of gone mad, but everything's been made recently, and with an office carpet to boot.
Yeah, because I remember his last show at Listen, he had an amazing kind of sound piece, which was the American winner of American Idol, Kelly Clarkson,
yeah.
who he became sort of obsessed with.
Yeah.
And he riffed off that. And you kind of, it's that thing of, well, we'll take it on your good authority, Austin, that he loves internet culture, not ironically.
Absolutely.
But there is that strange prism through which we all look at some of this stuff where we go,
yeah.
what's he doing there? And is that kind of the point? Or do you need to kind of go armed with some kind of art critical faculty to be able to really enjoy this show?
Well, he would like you to do both. He would like you to be able to read it just as culture, just as contemporary culture. It's about wearing a tracksuit. It's about looking at a picture of Kanye West. It's just about being us today. But you could also say, oh, it's like abstract art from the 1920s. So that you can read it both ways. And actually, you mentioned a sound piece. There is a sound piece in this show, which is quite interesting because he's got this kind of white noise, this kind of whoosh, which is sort of the soundtrack to the show. And he's actually ripped that from the kind of, let's say, a big commercial EDM electronic dance music right. blockbuster track, which uses this white noise underneath it to sort of fill out the sound. So, you know, it's kind of like pumping up the volume of a big dance track. And so he's got a picture of David Guetta in the corner, you know, and things like that. And he's also engaged with this campaign that we made online for these clickbait images, you know, the kind of things you get below the line yeah. of a newspaper article. So you can find these on the internet and they say things like 27 reasons your cat hates you, and you click through and you go straight to Corey's page. And he loves mining all of that as well, that kind of, you know, the real gubbins of how the internet works and, you know, the machinations. Not to say that, you know, it's ironic. It's just he wants to figure it all out. He wants to knit it all together.
And in a way, it's what we all do.
Absolutely,
whether
yeah.
we're high or low, there is some, yeah. We've all clicked on one of these things. How's this work shown? What are we looking at? Are we looking at reproductions of websites on the wall? Are we? You've mentioned sound pieces. What form does the show
take? They're all the same. They're all kind of like human-sized frames, black frames, white frames. It's very egalitarian, if you want to call it that, very democratic. All the imagery looks the same. But within there, you'll see the moving images. Suddenly, there's one of his classic Nintendo hacks where he used to take apart a Nintendo cartridge, fiddle around with it, and then suddenly you get just a plane flying through the sky, or just clouds, you know, nothing else. So there's a couple of those, but they've been updated, and there's a couple of earlier works that you might recognise. But yeah, it's very democratic. It's almost like you're kind of browsing through these black frames.
It's fascinating stuff. I always, yeah, he was a joy to speak to as well. He's very interesting. I say as well, instead of Jeff.
Yes, the opposite.
Yeah. So it's called Current Mood. It's by Corey Archangel, and it's on at Listen Gallery, just around the corner from Monocle Towers here, until the 2nd of July. I think that's a must-see. We're going to end up at the ICA, Ossie, and this is a show of the LA artist Martine Sims. And there's a lot of themes going on here, tricky things, but done quite wittily, it mm-hmm. seems. Talk us through Martine Sims.
Yeah, definitely tricky things. The title is Fact and Trouble, which gives you a sense of what she's working with. She's working with existing footage. She's working with personal things. So there's almost like a wallpaper installation as you come in. Some of her own pictures, kind of childhood pictures. And also a bit of a story going on, a story about a white woman being kissed by a black guy by mistake or something. You know, there's some sort of narrative that you have to tease out. And then in one room, you're left with quite a beautiful painting, a wall painting, which is reads out the words lightly, slightly, politely. And there's lots of references, literary references to cultural theorists and the like. And I guess this phrase is almost like a way of describing something that's done perfectly, lightly, slightly, politely. But there's not really that much polite about her work. So she makes these, in the middle as a video screen, of these short 30-second clips, which she refers to almost as adverts. And she makes them, like Corey, she kind of downloads them, she finds them, they're GIFs, they're Vines, they're very sort of, but they're quite edgy. They've got a sense of like there might be something else going on. There's a weird one of Venus Williams when she was 14 and her dad busting in on this interview and ripping the guy who's interviewing her, saying, well, you know, don't talk to her like that. You get some sort of weird charge. And there's a film of some guys throwing chairs that's just got no context. There's a lot of things going on that could be read in lots of different ways.
Having checked out her work online before our chat, Ossian, it seems like there's a lot of sort of the appropriation of images of African Americans in media and everyday images, and there's kind of shots that look like they're webcam, and you get, as you say, there's a lot of stuff that you think might be lurking outside, whether it's context, whether it's violence or something, or whether it is a news story. There's a lot of stuff that you almost feel unequipped to judge, but you have a feeling about. There's got a lot of feeling in this work.
Yeah, and she's sophisticated in that she uses that feeling very, very well, and it's judged very carefully. So, you know, you can tell that it's an erudite person making this. It's not thrown together. But it does leave you at some remove, but I think there's also the sense in which that's always charged with something. What's missing for me from the show is just herself, because she also does performances, and I'm aware I didn't see the particular performance, but, you know, that might enhance the kind of the connection you might get from it. But in terms of the references and the play and the use of imagery versus the setup, the context, she's brilliant at doing that. You know, she really gives you this framework where you have to kind of navigate. And how do I navigate myself through 30-second clips? You know, am I just an advert? Or, you know, how do you resolve identity in an age where we're just given those 30-second clips? And what does that constitute? And what constitutes blackness and culture in an age where it's so dissipated, and perhaps it's also charged against, you know, against you in the first place?
That is Martine Sims at the ICA. The show is called Fact and Trouble, and it's on until the 19th of June. Before that, we talked about Current Mood by Corey Archangel at Listen Gallery, and that's on until the 2nd of July. We kicked off with Jeff Koons at Damien Hirst's Newport Street Gallery. That's on all the way until the 16th of October. London Choices, all of them. Thank you very much to Ossian Ward for providing the lowdown. This show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow to talk music with Laura Snapes. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.